managers and therefore bring new perspectives to the family enterprises? And on the other hand, how do we ease the entry of professional managers into family enterprises? And we thought that these developments are going to lead to a new style of Asian management where corporate strengths and family strengths will begin to meet. The other concern that was discussed in our workshop was the difference between Asian managers working in essentially a national environment and Asian managers that have to work in an international environment. And the discussions led us to the conclusion that this transition from being a manager in a national setting to a manager in an international setting is a rather sensitive matter and needs to be considered as a important priority area for management development and education, not only within the individual companies but in the region as a whole. One of the things that sort of left us in some perplexity was this question of, are Asian managers willing enough to question the status quo? And that was, we had to leave that at that without providing an answer for that. The point at which a lot of consensus developed in the workshop was that in furtherance to the idea of developing an Asian manager was the need for the different countries in Asia and the different companies operating in Asia to increase the rate at which the different networks of relationships between different levels of companies, different levels of academic institutions are made use of in order that a sort of a exchange of experiences and ideas between the different managers of Asia become more possible. The observation was made that fortunately there are many networks already starting to emerge. At the academic level, you have all kinds of associations between the different academic institutions going on. At the business level, you have many types of chambers that are crossing national lines and taking a more regional and international character. And at the civic level, we begin to see many more organizations such as the Asian Business Congress, which is allowing the managers of Asia to come together to consider questions that are beyond the ordinary questions of business and management. Finally, in all of this discussion, the idea of the influence of culture kept floating in and out of the discussion. And one of the ideas that came about is that precisely because of the importance of culture, that the earlier notion of building networks between associations of managers in Asia is very important. Some concern was raised of the danger of imposing a Western mode of management thinking in and accepting that as the desirable mode of management thinking for Asia. And so that what was considered to be important, again, was to bring together the different groups of people that are interested in management in Asia in a kind of a continuing dialogue and inquiry in order to understand better what these cultural influences do. One particular area which we applied this thinking was in the area of ethics and, of course, the phenomena of corruption in our different settings. Finally, the last point I think that we discussed was to take note of the fact that in Asia, there is a lot more flow between the public sector and the private sector, particularly in terms of managers moving in and out of public and private sectors. And we had a very distinguished panel of people that were participating in the workshop. And the rapporteur, Mr. Raj Chitli, put together all of the notes of the workshop, and the workshop was co-chaired by Mr. Brian Sheehan of the School of Business of Phillip Institute in Victoria. Thank you very much.
Our Philippine Internal Revenue Commissioner, Mr. Benny Tan, refuses to report on corporate social balance sheet. He wants to concentrate on collection of taxes. So he has delegated it to Mr. John Fletcher, Chief Executive Officer of the Commonwealth Development Bank.
Mr. Chairman, there are two reasons why Benny Tan delegated. One, he didn't have a possible hope of reading my writing, and in fact I possibly have some difficulty. And as you can imagine from the introduction that's just been given to Ben Tan, our group got off to a very bad start, because as the rest of the Philippine businessmen in our group joined us, he and I were discussing fringe benefits tax. And he is showing a very keen interest in it. I warn you, in Philippines, he thinks it's a very good way of collecting revenue. Our corporation can assure you it is. We paid $32 million last year. On the corporate social balance sheet, business is well aware that the community assesses and judges the performance of business by the published balance sheet, the financial balance sheet, which is in the end result, which is the end result of the financial profit and loss accounting of the business. Our workshop, undoubtedly in common with most of this Congress, or the people of this Congress, consider the financial balance sheet is an inadequate measure of the real performance of any business enterprise. The real measure is the corporate social balance sheet. If we did not believe this, it is doubtful that we would be at this Congress. Our workshop quite logically, therefore, addressed the questions that have to be asked and answered if we are to complete a corporate social balance sheet, if we are to complete a corporate social profit and loss account as the essential step in compiling that corporate social balance sheet. Many of the papers delivered at this Congress provided excellent material for our deliberations, none better than the inaugural address of His Eminence Cardinal Sin. These papers were supplemented by papers of our workshop chairman and discussant, which addressed quite specifically the corporate social balance sheet. I commend those papers to all of you to read when they are published in the Congress Proceedings Report. Let me quote a couple of excerpts to illustrate the content and its applicability to our deliberations. Crawford Lang of Canada quoted in his paper, "Managing only for profit is like playing tennis with your eye on the scoreboard and not on the ball. The tennis game is won by keeping your eye on the ball, and the long-term success of an organization is assured by paying attention to the real bottom line, which I submit is the social and ethical health of the company and of all of its managers, employees, and customers." Another quote, which I, again, is indicative of the quality of both papers, "An organization which is made up of human beings has a character, needs a conscience, and should have a sense of purpose, just like the people who form it." It could be asserted, and in fact I do assert, that the conclusions arrived at by our workshop as to what should be the form and content of the corporate social profit and loss account and of the corporate social balance sheet could be the blueprint for the formulation of the plan to emerge from this Congress to fulfill our vision for total human development in Asia and even in the whole world. What were those conclusions? The true measure of a corporation's accomplishments is not just the bottom line figure of profit or return on investment as seen in the corporation's financial profit and loss and balance sheet. The true measure is the corporate social balance sheet, which certainly includes the profit measures, which leads to the very essential creation of wealth, but also includes much more. The corporate social balance sheet is based on integrity and the full range of factors that one well understood and very descriptive word implies. Integrity demands that the corporate social balance sheet will reflect that corporate social responsibility is an integral part of the corporate plan and mission statement, is the responsibility of a key board member of the corporation, preferably the chairman, so that the commitment is clearly understood throughout the corporation, that it involves training, development, equal opportunity and justice for all, be they management, employee or customer, that it respects and contributes to the inherent dignity of man, that it is cognizant of the needs of the core on which all decent democratic societies are built, the family, that it realises that the practice and acceptance of social responsibility is in the best long-term profit objectives of the corporation, that it is self-fulfilling, that it caters not only for the material but also the spiritual needs of all people of the corporation, as is done in many companies in Victoria in conjunction with the Interchurch mission. That the corporate balance sheet aims at the creation of a happy and contented joint endeavour between capital and labour, between management and employee, that it aims at the ridding of society of poverty and squalor, at establishing security and acceptable community relationships, at creating self-reliance at all level, and that's been commented on in earlier reports, and it aims at giving hope for the future among the less privileged in the community. No business or corporation can accept a situation where it stands as an island of material prosperity in a sea of poverty and degradation. Justice requires that wealth and the ability to create wealth must be shared with planning and executive skill delivering the benefits professionally for maximum effect. Happiness and prosperity cannot be the monopoly of any one person or group of persons to the exclusion of others or at the cost of their exploitation. Our workshop agrees that it is much easier to draw the blueprint than to construct the edifice. We further agree that there can be a wide range of views among people of equal goodwill and commitment to the principles of a corporate social balance sheet based on integrity. From among our members, we are able to offer some tried and proven methods of implementing the recommendations without ignoring the legitimate claims of the shareholders, and in fact with the potential to add significantly to the benefits enjoyed by those shareholders. Those methods include the Philippine Business for Social Progress Foundation for joint business. Commitment to improving the quality of life of the Filipino poor is one such successful and very practical self-help method. We would also bring back to your attention the wide-ranging practices of the Bata Corporation as outlined by Mr. Beatty in his excellent presentation yesterday. Another method that recognises social responsibility is an integral part of business operations and not an appendage. The practices of Florsheim, as specified by Mr. Council yesterday, is yet another practical approach. What we fear is that these schemes are the exception rather than the rule. We therefore recommend that findings of the Congress and the social responsibility practices that have been brought to notice so well at this Congress be publicised as widely as possible in the fervent hope that more business people of goodwill will adopt similar or even better practices that will result in closer attention to the corporate social balance sheet and therefore cater more effectively for human development. In that context, Mr. Chairman, we quote from the inaugural address by Cardinal Sin, "Development, whether national or regional, whether social or economic, is in fact truly meaningful only when based on the development of the human being, only when it is intrinsically linked to the nature and the ultimate end of man." Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. The last report from Tan Sri Dato Arshad Ayub regarding business and its cultural environment. May we call then on Mr. Armstrong?
Mr. Chairman, I think one of the things I've learned in life is that when your chairman asks you to do something, you don't argue, you do it. So it is a pleasure to stand in for Dr. Ayub, and what I say here reflects very strongly the views and directions that he gave our working group in the discussion that we had on the subject of business and the cultural environment. Some interesting facts about our group. We were a small group with some very strong and well-expressed views. We were there were an equal number of women and men, and as Dr. Ayub said, as chairman, he had the casting vote, and if we had to vote, it was going to be with the women. We had only two people from Australia in the group. The rest were from different countries in Asia. Despite that, we had a very warm and easy interchange of our attitudes and views on the subject of the cultural environment of business. One very quick and ready fact that was accepted was there is a slight misnomer in using the word Asian as a broad brush characterization of all the countries, because within Asia, of which Australia considers itself a part, there are different countries, each that has its own features, its own attitudes, and there's as many differences between, say, Japan and Indonesia as there may be between Japan and Australia. Nevertheless, for the purposes of our discussion, we agreed that we would accept Australia as typifying a Western business cultural environment, and the others would represent what would be perceived as the more Asian environment. Dr. Ayub summed up the situation very well when he said he saw the question as being in the nature of a spectrum. At one end of the spectrum, one might see the business and social values of an Asian environment. The other end, you may see the similar ones of the Western environment. But already those two ends had begun to move towards each other, and that fact should not be overlooked. We then spent quite a bit of our time talking about what would be, as much as one can in a situation of a discussion of this nature, the main differences, or better, the perceptions of differences between an Asian and Australian business environment. In this regard, I should recommend to you for reading the two papers that we had given to us by Mrs. Sison and Dr. Prishishu. I hope the organizers will make those papers available, because work went into that, and I think many of these very important but difficult concepts have been brought out in the papers. I'm afraid what I will try and summarize does not really do justice or convey the range of matters that could be that have been covered in those two papers. But since I do have to sum up, let me say that the main differences that we focused on were the following. In the Asian attitudes, it was seen very clearly that it was people that mattered, or the people that was the focus of the business environment, whereas the Western perception of the bottom line and profit tended to perhaps minimize or not give as much importance to people. As Dr. Ayub used the expression, it was a case of comparing development for humans against humans for development. Part of the environment also relates to the very strong position of family and relationships that is so characteristic of all the countries in Asia, perhaps with the exception of Australia. I think underlying our discussions on that theme, as Mrs. Sison said, referring to the Philippine concept of, I hope I pronounce it correctly, pagkatao, or the dignity of man, is of very, very high value and importance in an Asian environment. I don't think by that was even suggested that in Australia or Western perception the dignity of man or the human values were ignored, but it was much more the difference of focus between what in a business environment was seen as more important. We talked about the authority attitudes that stem from the Asian background, which and the way in which this is translated in a business environment. It is based on using the family relationships, the paternalistic attitudes, the feeling of responsibility that flows between boss and subordinate, that leads to very strong loyalty feelings that go both ways, from boss to subordinate, from subordinate to boss. And in contrast to this, it was perceived that in a Western business environment, which was far more inclined to use rationalistic principles of organization, the emphasis was more on roles and functions and making sure that the people you had in those roles and functions were the right ones without any regard to the building up of these relationships. We talked about the very different degrees in which women were perceived in business in an Asian environment as that in the Western environment, recognizing that the present position of women in the Western business environment is certainly a more recent phenomenon, whereas in Asia it is still very much, in broad terms, a masculine-dominated society. There was some question about that being quite as absolute as that, and I think, again, if I'm not mistaken, it was Dr. Ayub who put it very clearly, very nicely, that if you saw a man as the head, women is or are the neck, and you've got to just think which moves which. In Asian thinking, there is a great deal still, fundamentally, because of the education, the background, the family, perceived in the respect and regard given to people of age and experience. And that is translated very much into the business environment. Now, I have to tell you, there are two Australians who are there. The other gentleman was of my age. That is one value we totally agreed with. No problems. Well, there were others of no less importance, but time, I can't go through all of them. We talked then about how does this all affect business. No one had any difficulty in recognizing that business has to succeed. Business doesn't exist in some altruistic form. But what was important and needed recognition that it is not intrinsic, an intrinsic truth that Asian values or Asian attitudes must inevitably lead to inefficient operations or lack of profitability just because it is done differently or the management styles or attitudes are different. We could think of nothing better than to, and we were fortunate to have a representative from Japan with us, to look at the very notable example of what Japan, that spanned the cultures of Asia and West in their approach to business, has done. And when we asked our Japanese member, Mr. Tawa, to talk about why then were Asian values in Japan able to run such successful businesses, and I'm sure if he's here he wouldn't mind my repeating, he told us to start that it reminded him of the story that he heard recently that in Wall Street some very high powered person, I'm sure he wasn't meaning Mr. Bursky, got into a lot of problems, and the judge in sentencing him said, look, you've got a choice, I will give you 1 week in jail or you will subject yourself to a lecture on why do the Japanese run businesses efficiently, and he quickly said, put me in jail. We then said our discussions and said, well, this is all very nice, but what do we end up with? What can we really do, or what should we be recommending that people should think about to try and bring the Asian and Western attitudes closer to each other? And we had a few thoughts which don't all translate into practical steps, but nevertheless, it, I think, shows a direction we want to go in. We made it very clear that the objective should not be to try and get Asian and Western business attitudes to become one or uniform. On the contrary, we all saw that there's great values in diversity, but what we thought was important is an acceptance or a very quick recognition that one must accept that one can learn from each of the different systems or cultures and should be willing to move in that direction. It's not just enough to talk, but to try and see how you can get this closeness brought together. And we talked about things like the use in more defined terms of organizations, such as different business associations, congresses such as this, where an admirable opportunity is provided to people to exchange their ideas and go away, hopefully with a better understanding. We all felt, again, if I may use the term that Mr. Tawa gave us in a Japanese business concept, what was there is nimawashi. which is the background work that must be done for any business decision in their system, but the principles are same if we are to achieve our objectives. It really boils down to looking at education. Education at schools, educations in business organizations, the training of people who have to go and work in other countries. And I think one of our members, Mrs. Smith, in an earlier discussion had talked about the role of assisting people who are expatriates to be trained and prepared before they go and just accept that they're working as part of a foreign investment scenario in another country. Looking at all that, we said, let's sum it up. What does it amount to? And it comes, there are a few very simple principles. It comes to a willingness to want to understand the ways and attitudes of different cultures. More important than that, it needs an attitude of respect, a respect for the fact that there are differences and that one is not more superior than the other. I think most of the members in our team, and I think probably at this Congress, were very impressed with the way in which Mr. Luscombe on the first day spoke. And that was so heavily emphasized in our group as saying that is a very good example of a person who came across so genuinely as one who not only liked but almost loved the people with whom he worked. And that's the sort of person who should really be encouraged to go and work in other countries rather than someone else. All this says is there should be a willingness to adopt positive attitudes to learn and to learn from the values that each of the different cultures can bring to the other. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your report. The chair will now entertain a few questions, if any, regarding the reports of the different workshops. And very brief comments, if any. Any volunteers? If none, we can move to the next item of the agenda. And the next item of the agenda is the consensus report. But in view of the fact that we cannot reflect the conclusions contained in the reports of the various chairmen, we will be dispensing with the reading of the consensus report because there isn't one. Instead, we will ask the chairman of the Asian Business Congress in Australia, together with our Secretary General, to draft the consensus statement, incorporating the sentiments articulated in the various papers presented, as well as the workshop report, and the same will be distributed to the different country head delegations so that their comments can be incorporated into a final draft that will be incorporated in the final report that will be distributed before the Thailand Council meeting, which will take place sometime in November this year. Is there a motion in that regard, which is authorizing the chairman and the secretary general? Gasti? Yeah.
Second?
All right. Thank you. All in favor? No objections? Approved.
Yeah, you want to, before things, yes. Stop a few things. You want to get on to the things? Somebody wants to say something? Please, use the mic there. Would you use the mic, please, Gaston? Thank you.
I'm supporting the motion that has already been passed and asking that a little amendment be added to it in this shape. I think that, for example, the report of the workshop on the corporate balance sheet, for example, I think might be the kind of report that we might already, all of us, might be willing to say this is the kind of thing that we would like to see in that consensus statement, the report of the corporate balance sheet group. And I was wondering whether we might want to spend a few minutes in plenary to have a few statements from the participants as to the general kinds of things that they might want included in the consensus statement. Thank you.
Yes. So can we get the reaction to the proposal, well, to the suggestion of what will be the elements that will be incorporated in the consensus statement? Gasti Ortigas has indicated that the report of the workshop committee on corporate social responsibility, rather corporate balance sheet, can in a way reflect the major elements that can be incorporated in the consensus statement. Any